going to play, Sam?
We're going to play Take Me Out to the Ball Game. We're all going to sing it, too.
And welcome you to another edition of Meet Me at Mutual. I'm your host, Daniel Shoptoff, C70 at the bat on Twitter. Usually, I say, and I'm always joined by Alan Medlock of Red Dirt Ripper and Nate Medlock One on Twitter, but this week, not so much. Alan is out. His daughter is graduating. We want to say congratulations to Emmy Medlock on graduating high school in... I know it's not a graduation she ever expected. It's a lot different than normal with everything going on, but we're glad that she's starting this next phase in her life. But filling in for Alan tonight is Russ Robinson. You may know Russ as Uncle Frank on Twitter, FRR Robinson 1957. See, Russ, I told you.
Yeah.
I had been in front of me. I still can't get it right.
Too many
R's. He also writes at Red Burt Rants.
Right.
Say what?
I said too many R's in there for you to get in a row.
He does. I always forget there's that extra one.
Yeah.
Rodney Redbird Rants. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine. We're still, I'm working from home tomorrow, so this works well. I've working about a couple of days a week at home and then the rest of the time in the office. So, but this worked well for me tonight.
Well, good. Now, where are you at? Where are you located?
I live in the Missouri Boot Hill. I live in a little town called Zenith, Missouri. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Most people haven't, but that's where I grew up at. After I got out of college, I spent some years in Atlanta, Georgia, and in Nashville, Tennessee. Then I came back here a few years ago, and so this looks like where I'm going to stay. So.
Well, it gives you a little bit closer to getting to St. Louis. And are you able to get up there very often?
Well, I haven't.
There's actually not a pandemic.
Well, yeah, I haven't in recent years. I used to go up there fairly regularly, but since I've moved back, I don't think I've been up to a Cardinal game since then. I miss that. I haven't seen the new stadium, and I want to try to get up there sometime, but. I was at the old stadium. Then I've seen the Cardinals play in Atlanta, Georgia, at the Braves at the old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium when I lived there. Whenever the Cardinals came in town, I tried to get tickets and go. And it was a good time in that time as the Braves weren't very good. This was in the late 80s, early 90s, right before they got good. And I was able to get down one game. I was right down by the Cardinal dugout, and I got to see I could almost touch Ozzie and Whitey. So that was, there's the best seats I've ever had at a baseball game. That's when nobody was going to the Braves games.
Oh yeah. Those, you know, of course I would watch them on TBS back then, and it's kind of like the Miami and the Pittsburghs of these days.
And when I moved to Nashville, that was the 91, 92, I think it's when that first year they went to the World Series. Mm-hmm. That was about the year I moved away. And so I didn't get to see the good Braves. I pulled for them unless they played the Cardinals. So,
well, sure. Yeah. Sure. They Cardinals Braves, especially back then, they had that 20 something or 15 inning or whatever Oquindo pitched in it. That was against the Braves. Interesting matchups.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you know, and I don't know if you've ever gone to a game at someone else's stadium, but especially if you live in the town, but people kind of look at you funny like, what are you doing? You live here and you've got a Cardinals cap on, a Cardinals t-shirt on. What are you doing? But, you know, it's just like I tell them, when you get married, you don't forget who your parents are. So that's just.
That's true.
Yeah.
That is true. I came up again somewhere on Twitter, somebody mentioned something like that. And I realized, I think the only time I've visited other stadiums has not been when the Cardinals have been there. It's just been, on a vacation. I've been at the Cincinnati ballpark and a few other things, but never have seen the Cardinals play as a visiting team. And so, that's got to be a little bit weird.
It is. And it's not being in Busch Stadium. It was a little old Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. That was before Turner Field. That was before, they're in the new stadium now, I think, over there. They're really nice.
Yeah, SunTrust.
SunTrust. But that was the old Cooker Cutter Stadium. It's a lot like Busch, as it was designed for football and baseball. And I saw the Atlanta Falcons play there, too. So, in the fall, you go in there and same stadium and see a football game. In the summer, you see a baseball game, it wasn't as pretty as Busch Stadium. The old Busch Stadium was. It wasn't near as pretty, so.
Yeah, the old Busch always, even though it was, like you said, that cookie cutter, that, Atlanta and Philadelphia and Pittsburgh and, so many of those, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
The Cardinals was just a little bit different. I mean, the arches at the beginning helped, and it was, of course, obviously if it's your stadium, you kind of have a better feeling for it. But I do think there was a little bit of originality in that, even while it stood in that pattern.
Yeah, I remember the first time I don't know if it was because it's the first big stadium I ever went to when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I was so impressed when I walked into the interior of the stadium where the field was, the seats were, and saw all that red, the red seats, everything was red. And there's nothing that could impress me more. I don't think I've ever seen a stadium as I was impressed with as I saw that one. And that included NFL stadiums. I saw that I was at the Titan Stadium when I lived in Nashville. I saw the Mizzou Faurot Field and all that. There's something about the Cardinals Stadium was just a it just seemed beautiful to me. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you got the love for them, then that helps us as well.
That's right.
So before we start talking about what's going on and everything like that, but let's talk a little bit about why you got into writing at Redbird Rants. What got you motivated to do all that?
Well, I was, of course, being a fan for such a long time, and I got up active on Twitter and, set up my handle and all that, started following people, started listening to podcasts like yourselves, you and Alan's, and some others, and started reading some of the blogosphere, some of the blogs out there, different blog sites. And I started reading Redbird Rants, and they were always recruiting writers. Mm-hmm. And I have never done anything like this before. Last writing class I had was in college. I hadn't really written anything since. But they just kept coming at you on their site. We need, if you'd like to write for the Cardinals, something about the Cardinals, fulfill your passion and contact us. So finally, after about a year of that, I just finally took a chance and responded. And the bar is pretty low, I guess, because they took me on, So I started writing, and that was in November of my first blog was in November of 2017, and I do it for that's what got me started, and I don't know if I'm any good at it or not, but I enjoy it, and I always hope that I don't care. I've gotten to the point when I first started blogging, I got my feelings hurt if people disagreed with me. But now I just like if I can tell they've read the piece I've written, I don't care. As long as they if they've read it, and even if they disagree with it, I say, hey, at least they went through it and read it.
Yeah, I it's one of those things. Occasionally, people ask me for any sort of blogging advice, which is a ridiculous thing to do. But the little bit that I have is always been you write what you want to write and how you want to write it, and you don't worry too much about if anybody's reading it or not, what their opinion is. You can't be writing to, I don't think. Now, obviously, I don't get a lot of hits. Maybe I'm doing it wrong, but I don't feel like you can write to try to, clickbait and all that kind of thing, or don't write anything. You put it out there, and if people like it, they like it, and if they don't, they don't. But it's more about, to some degree, writing for you than it is for anybody else.
Oh yeah, and you know, and I can't write a lot on prospects. Not that I don't enjoy reading about them, but I just don't know as much about them. Someone like Kyle Reese or Trevor Huth, you know, those two guys, and they're quite, and I just can't do that. That's not where my joy is at. So, and really I end up writing, if you've read most, it's a lot about a lot of historical stuff about the Cardinals, you know, and then every once in a while, while the season's going on, something will happen. They'll make me mad. I think we all do. And then I'll put something out about what happened in that game or what someone's not doing or what they should have been doing or why did they go to that person in the bullpen. So something that gets your passion up, gets your ire up, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, and there's no doubt baseball will do that. And we may have a little bit of that as we go along tonight as well. We'll find out. But about an hour, 2 hours ago, I guess, the Cardinals announced their 2020 class for the Hall of Fame. I didn't see the announcement. I assume that the actual induction is still kind of up in the air because of everything that's going on. Usually it's end of August at Ballpark Village, and I don't imagine that that's going to be the case this year, but that's probably things to be worked out later. The fans voted in Tommy Herr and John Tudor, and then the Red Ribbon Committee put in Bill White. Just your general thoughts, maybe a little bit about these players getting in.
Well, I said when they sent out the nominations for the fans to vote, I said there was really not anyone here that I could get upset about if they got in. I voted for Keith Hernandez and Renteria. I voted for Renteria. That was who I voted. And I think I even did a blog over at Redbird Rants at that time saying why I wanted those two. But there was none of them that I was – I'd be upset if they got in. And I'm glad they got Bill White in there because Bill White really was a good baseball player back in the early 60s and a big part of that 64 World Series team. I don't remember him that well because that really was, I was too small to be watching baseball at that time. So I don't remember him that, but I'm glad they got Bill White in there. And so, Tommy Herr and John Tudor, Herr was was a big part of those 80s teams. And, he was a good, solid player, good second baseman. And, you know, Tudor had that one year where he should have won the Cy Young Award, but hadn't been for Dwight Gooden. Dwight Gooden hadn't had that career year too. Yeah. You know, Tudor would have been a Cy Young Award winner that year. He was something else. So that's fine with me. I would have liked to have seen Keith Hernandez get in. I don't know if they're ever going to get him in, unless it becomes that. What is that Red Ribbon Committee? Is that one they put in that? The veterans finally vote you in, so it might be that's the way Keith gets in. He's been up, about 3 years in a row, I think?
He's been, actually, and I did a little bit of research on this. Keith Hernandez is the only person that has been on the ballot every year since they started. He's been on there since 2014. Although the only person that's been on there that hasn't, of course, been elected. Yeah. Even Matt Morris was on the original one in 2014, but he had a couple of years that he was off. And that's what's a little bit strange about how they do this, because you know players come on and they go off, even if they're not necessarily elected. Like Carlton has been on like 3 of the 7 years, but they're not like together. It's like 1 year he's on, 1 year he's off. So I don't really know what the process is like with this.
Yeah, I don't either. I don't know if there's a committee that selects them and then they go hot and cold on certain players. Just looking at Hernandez is what he accomplished as a Cardinal. To me, it's just incredible that he hasn't been voted in by the fans. But I understand why. I know what all happened when he left. And I know since after he left, he's really identified as a Met. You know, he's a Met broadcaster. They love him over there in New York. And as I said, the famous Seinfeld episode he was on, I think, just solidified him as a met with a lot of people, you know. So, and we're getting far enough away. Those there's not, you know, there's a lot of fans who don't remember the years he played with the Cardinals. And Daniel, you may not either. You know, it's it goes back. He left in 83. So it's been some years ago since he's been a Cardinal.
Yeah, I mean, I came into following baseball really regularly. It was, I was, you know, it was about 87. So I was, you know, what, 11, I was 12 in, right. that, in that area. And so, yeah, he was a Met for me.
Right.
You know, because that's where, his, the, you know, that especially in those, you know, big 80s times when the Cardinals were, they were facing off against Casey Hernandez and the Mets, you know.
Right.
So, I get that. I mean, when you look at his career, and you're right, when you look back at what this is, it is to the point where you would expect him to be there. And that kind of gets me to a little bit of the point that I want to make. Because, you know, the first few years, I understand, you know, you look at 2014 and you have McGee and Edmonds go in. Okay, that makes sense. And then Forsh and Simmons go in. And then Torrey and Carpenter go in. And, you know, there's been... But it feels like the last couple of years, maybe that the pool is getting a little bit shallower and you would think he would get in there.
Yeah.
But. Yeah.
Right.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I think you're right. It seemed like I really thought this year he might get in because it just seemed like that the, as you said, Renteria had multiple gold gloves, but her had none. You know, Tudor was a good pitcher. He had one outstanding year, but he was a good pitcher. Matt Morris, you know, had a 120 game year, didn't he? I think that was, had 120
wins. He was awful close.
Yeah. And so I was just going through. Lee Smith was the other one that was on it. Lee Smith had, you know, obviously a lot of good years with the Cardinals, but I just thought this might be the year they get, Hernandez might get in, but the fans just don't consider him a priority to get him in. So,
and I think that it kind of gets me to a little bit of what I want to talk about. Is there, and maybe we can speak to this because we are of that, we of that generation. Is there a little bit too much emphasis placed on those 80s teams? I'm looking at the 1985, just the roster, and you've got now Tommy Herz from that team is in. Ozzie Smith obviously was in. Vince Coleman is in. Willie McGee is in. Yeah, John Tudor is in. Bob Forsh is in. So that's six from just that team. And Todd Worrell, he's not in yet. Yeah, that's an interesting name. We'll go back to that some other time. But yeah. I just feel like there is that emphasis. Maybe I know obviously those 80s teams were great, and I've had this argument. Alan and I have talked about this. I think in the past. But do you think that maybe the fan base is just a little bit too focused on that? Again, this year, Tommy Herman making it on his first try. You know, John Tudor over people like Keith Hernandez, over people like Steve Carlton, who, you know, Carlton. Hall of Famer. So you know, where does that happen? Where do you think there is too much look at that 80s team, and they're pretty much going to put, I mean, are we going to look at, see, you know, Tom Nito in there at some point in time?
Who's the guy who stole home?
Glenn Murmur. That was a couple years before that. That was in the 85. That was in the early 80s. So he may make it.
The three-time, the third-string catcher on the team.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, you got a good point there. You know, so many of us are so focused on the 80s, and I am too. I was a grown adult by the time the 80s came along, but we've been such a long, we went through the 70s and nothing happened. And we waited and waited and waited. Then that 82 team came on and all those players on there. And I think a lot of people just have those fond memories of that 80s team. And they tend to overlook, maybe tend to, like, you've got a point. They tend to overlook maybe players who came along later that might be more deserving to go ahead and go in. And, yeah, it's like a love affair. You know, Tony La Russa always got compared to Whitey Herzog. You know, when he was manager, everybody said, well, Herzog would have done this. Herzog would have done that. Of course, now that La Russa's gone, we're talking about, well, La Russa did this. La Russa would have done that, you know. So I guess it just depends what your, you know, who's not around, who's not playing anymore, you know. Pretty soon we'll be talking. We might be, who knows, Daniel, we might be talking about that great 2014 team. You know, one day, you know,
yeah.
Fond memories of that team.
Well, I do wonder if maybe in a generation or so that the 2004 teams or some of those 4, 5, 6, that group,
yeah,
will get a lot of due. Now, and again, I should probably preface, you know, last year you had Jason Isringhausen and Scott Rolen go in, who were obviously part of right. that 2000s team.
Right.
So it's almost, it kind of goes sways back and forth. I've just, and maybe I'll get your opinion. Do they need to change this now that this will be, let's see, this is the 7th year they've put people in. So that's 14 players that have been voted in by fans plus one every year from the Red Ribbon Committee. So that's another 7, that's 21. And then there was the first couple of years, the owners could put somebody in. They always have the right to. I just think they've decided not to do that very much right now.
Right.
So there's probably been, you know, a hand like 25, and that's not counting all the people that were in the Hall of Fame already, you know, right. Red and Stan and right. Ozzy. Right. Are we getting to the point where the pool's getting a little too shallow and we need to maybe back up and maybe just elect one person every year instead of two?
Well, you know, it could be that you know, we're to that. You know, you had to start it in 2014. You wanted to see them get caught up and get people in there, you know. And now, you know, as like you said, it could be that we're getting into that point where we're just beginning to get people who are good players, but are they even Cardinal Hall of Fame worthy? You know, what is Cardinal Hall of Fame worthy? Right. I guess that's a good, that's something we could discuss. Cardinal Hall of Fame worthy? I mean, is it offense and defense combined? Is it just offense? Is it, you know, what gets you there? Do you need to, if you're a position player, do you need to win a gold glove or do you need to have more than just one good, great year to get in, you know? That's a good question, Daniel. Something to think about. I hadn't ever thought about it that way, but yeah, it looks like they keep adding, what are we going, four players this year? If we still keep four players.
You know, you'll have White, and then White, Tudor, and her, I think, are all that's going in.
White, Tudor, and her. Okay, three players. Yeah. And if you're starting in three or four players every year, yeah, at some time, it could start getting bare, you know, like you said. You could get Glenn Blummer might be in for one play he made in 1982, you know.
I think you're right. I trying to figure out that criteria, because, I mean, you have this issue a little bit with Cooperstown.
Right.
But it's going to be even more so with the Cardinal Hall of Fame, because this is, I mean, it's true. It's a fan vote. It's not even the writers trying to make what's most valuable and what's not. It's the Cardinals fans saying, how do we want to decide who goes into this Hall of Fame?
Right.
And, you know, like that first year even kind of indicates you had Willie McGee, who was a great player for the Cardinals, but was a huge fan favorite. I mean, this is part of the reason we have the Cardinal Hall of Fame is because people wanted to retire 51 for Willie McGee, and the fan, the Cardinals didn't really want to do that for a guy like Willie McGee, who's not a Hall of Famer, but it obviously meant a lot to the organization. Mm-hmm. And then you have Jim Edmonds, who could have been, I think a lot of people would say should have been,
right,
an actual Hall of Famer.
Right. Scott Rolen, you know, was borderline. Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, there are some that are just legends. But how about, you're right. I mean, where do you draw that? I mean, David Freese is going to go into the Cardinal Hall of Fame. I think that's pretty obvious. Sure. I mean, hometown boy and all that stuff. But is he going into the Hall of Fame? He's basically going to the Hall of Fame for Game 6.
Game 6.
I mean, instead of necessarily his whole career as a Cardinal, it was a good career. Mm-hmm. But if he doesn't have Game 6 or he doesn't have that 2011 playoffs, that same career doesn't get him in, right?
That's right. Yeah, if he was hurt and wasn't able to play the World Series at all, you know, we probably don't win the World Series, and we probably, you know, right. And we probably don't, and he's not in the Hall of Fame. So, yeah, you know, the ownership, you know, another thing we talk about, and I hate to bring this up, Daniel, but, you know, McGuire, you know.
Yeah.
There's all that, the controversy surrounding him. And when he got in, or the Cardinals put him in, I thought, well, should they? But I understand why. I think that, was that an ownership decision? I don't think it was a fan vote.
No, that was a fan vote.
Oh,
that was a fan
okay. vote. You know, and I understand why, you know, people, you know, that was some year in 90, was that 90, 97 when he broke the record?
Or 97 is when he traded. He was traded over. Okay. 98, he broke the record. Then, of course, 99, he hit
98, and him so. And Sammy Sosa had that great great run with each other, and it was a lot of fun to watch. And do you put someone like that in who's using steroids, and what's the criteria there? You know, I mean, does the next player come up? If it ever came out that I hate to say this, if Albert Pujols used steroids while he was with St. Louis, I mean, how would that, should he be in? I mean, I'm bringing up something a lot of people are going to get mad at you.
You're still in, so you can do that.
Yeah. A lot of feedback, but you know, there's things to think about, you know, if we think about who should be going in and who shouldn't be going in. So, you know, I'm not sure they have a criteria. If they haven't certainly expressed it to the fans. And if it's a fan vote, I guess they're okay with a kind of a popularity contest, but it's a little spotty. I think it's been a little spotty about how they.
Yeah. I think we have to remember that to some degree, that it is a fan vote, mm-hmm. and the fans can make this however they want to make it. And I, you know, maybe the idea of putting some limitations and putting rules, and this is, you have to, I mean, obviously there's minimum rules. You have to play so long for the Cardinals. You have to be right. retired for 3 years, whatever, just to make it on the ballot. I mean, but, you know, let the fans make this the way they want to. And there's an argument for that to be a good idea. I mean, I wouldn't, Vince Coleman was obviously one of those, you know, kind of symbols of the 80s, but he wasn't really that great of a player except for the speed that he had, which was
right.
legendary. So I don't think I would have put him in, but obviously people did,
right?
And so,
well, there have been people I put in before Coleman, you know, certainly before we got to Coleman. You know, another person I think probably, I know we got that 3 year thing, but if you're gonna go in 1 year, Orlando Cepeda's 67 year was something else. And, you know, you just go look at Baseball Reference, what he did that year. You know, the Cardinals don't get to the World Series without him in the middle of that lineup. And if we're going with Tudor, Tudor had that great year. Cepeda played 2.5 years, I think. I think he came in 66, during the season, 66 was there, 67 to 68, and then got traded.
Yeah.
Or left. Mm-hmm. I don't know what, if it traded or left. I think he got traded. And, you know, I mean, if we're going to go with one great year, you know, Cepeda is kind of a, he might be someone that should be in. He probably will never be unless they make an exception in the Red Ribbon Committee. I guess I don't know how much flexibility.
I could see them putting him in and saying that, you know, he was part of the Cardinals for 3 seasons or whatever, however they want to do it. Right. I could see that being a red the committee. And I honestly don't know how much they are limited to the same restrictions. I know what it takes to get on the ballot, but that committee is a lot of the, you know, it's got Derek Gould, it's got Brian Walton, it's got, you know, everybody, you know, whoever's Ann Rogers is covering MLB now, she's on it. Plus all the, you know, Ozzie and all those guys that are in the Hall of Fame, or Edmonds, Carpenter, all these guys get a vote on it. So I've always thought it'd be a very interesting room to be in while they were discussing all these things. But I could see that it's a fade to him because he did have that kind of impact. You're right. I mean, now again, you know, he's obviously tied to the Giants, you know, I think in most people's minds.
Right.
And if you put him in, again, I you know, it's an interesting, you know, it's really all about what kind of hall you want to have. And the Cardinal Hall of Fame is probably going to turn into just a very large collection of guys.
Yeah.
Some that are really good and some that are that you remember.
Yeah.
I guess the whole truly a Hall of Fame because you remember them.
Yeah, yeah. I want my guys in the 80s in, and you want your guys after that in. You know, I mean, I want my guys in, your guys in, or someone else could say, yeah, I want my guys in the 60s in, and now I want my guys in the 80s. So it becomes who gets their guys in, you know. I hope, you know, now that we've talked about this, Daniel, and I hadn't thought about this, I hope it would be nice if there was kind of a criteria set up, especially as we get deeper into the process, that many more years to go on. I think, you know.
Yeah, it would be. I got to feel like they're going to make some adjustments somewhere along the way, that they're going to make it. It may have to be after they've done this for 10 years, but they're going to have to probably pull it down to just one person on the, you know, one person wins a fan vote, one person maybe from the committee, because at least the committee is good about pulling people, you know, what, like Pepper Martin from a few years ago,
yeah,
a guy like Bill White, a guy that's, you know, some of these guys that are, you know, 60s or before that a lot of people aren't necessarily going to vote for because they didn't see and didn't remember and they don't have that pull. I mean, you put a guy like Bill White on the ballot at the same time you put a Yadier Molina or whatever the case may be, it's not even going to be the close.
No.
You know?
No.
So it gives a chance. And I mean, who's going to vote for, you know, Pepper Martin or some of these other ones? Not that, you know, they deserve to be honored.
Right.
So I'm glad for the committee and the owners to have that option. But I feel like now, obviously, if Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina go out at the same year, then we want to keep it for two that year.
Imagine if
Albert Pujols, Yadier Molina, and Adam Wainwright wound up on the ballot all at the same time, and you could only vote for two.
Oh my!
Yeah,
it would be a war. You know, I could see people who are still mad at Pujols, you know, getting mad at someone voting. I mean, you can see hear it on Twitter. He's still mad at Pujols for leaving, you know, and never forgiving him. And God, he's played. He'll play by the time he retires. He'll play as many years with the Angels as he did with the Cardinals. So, I've always thought, Daniel, that's going to be an interesting day when he goes into the Baseball Hall of Fame and he has to select. I don't know. I guess he gets to select the uniform or the cap he goes in on. Is that the player's choice?
The player gets input on it. The Hall of Fame makes the decision for the most part.
Yeah.
They cooked that over, especially once Wade Boggs signed with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays at the time and signed in his contract that he would go in as a Devil Ray. You know, which makes no sense, obviously. And so to keep players from basically selling their spot, they, I think, took that back. Now, again, they'll ask the player, but I think they try to judge where, and I think in Pujols' case, you know, the 10 years that he had in St. Louis for, if he had retired then, he'd have been on the Hall of Fame. So I think there's no doubt he goes in as a Cardinal. But you're right. I mean, give him playing time, especially if he extends his contract for a year or something, he might actually play more. Well, he won't play more games since he's been hurt, but play more years in Anaheim than he played in St. Louis. And it's hard to believe.
Well, the Angels, you know, he's going to go. Doesn't his contract extend after his career with the Angels?
There was the personal services contract that's supposed to be 10 years. They outlawed it afterwards.
Oh.
And I don't know if that's retroactive. I don't know if it's still in place and they've, said from this point on, you can't have those kind of deals. That's also one of those things that it's really going to be up to both sides,
right?
You know, and if the Angels, you know, they got good out of Pujols, don't get me wrong. And Pujols is going to be, probably, you know, connected to that organization for the rest of his life. But I don't know that he's not like Mike Trout, who you want to be the face of your franchise for 10 years after he retires. I don't know that they're going to necessarily, you know, they'll have Pujols show up at some, you know, special occasions and things like that. But will it preclude him from doing things in St. Louis? I don't know about that.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that if he went into the Hall of Fame as a Cardinal in a Cardinal uniform, that Monday morning when he went into the Angel front office, that would have to be an uncomfortable moment. You know?
Yeah. But on the, you know, that you say that, and that's true. I can see that. But then, you know, Tony La Russa's in the Cardinal Hall of Fame. And yet he's still working. You know, he was inducted in the Cardinal Hall of Fame while he was working in Arizona, I think. And he's been working with Boston and still comes back. You know, some of those, it's weird. I mean, because you're right. I would feel like be like, man, this guy's, you know, he's obviously so connected to this organization and now he's working for us. But
yeah.
But, you know, I think somewhat baseball is able to separate that because players do move around and stuff and they understand, hey, you spent 10 years of your life there, your big best 10 years, you know, obviously there's a connection there.
Yeah.
So, but you're right. It would be, you know, a little bit interesting to, I don't know how Angels would celebrate that, but I guess they would because I know the Cardinals would probably do something for, you know, Lee Smith. Even though he's going in as a Cub, right? So
is he? Did he go in as a Cub?
Right on the wall.
Yeah. Okay.
I think that's what I saw.
Okay.
Let me see if I can pull it up and see. But I think it's what he said he was going in as.
How many did he play his more years with the Cubs? Was he? Is that his best years? I mean, he was pretty good with the Cardinals.
Yeah, he is going in as a Cub. I see that.
Okay.
Let me pull up the organization.
He came up with the Cubs. Yeah. Is that what he did? Okay.
It's considered his primary team. Let me see if I can. Well, I didn't pull up his. I was trying to find his stats to see. He played for the Cubs from 80 to 87 and then kind of bounced around after that. You know, went to the Red Sox, Cardinals, Yankees, Orioles, Angels, Reds, and Expos. So,
okay.
He spent a tournament. Yeah,
he had quite a journeyman's
career. Yeah, I didn't realize. After he, like the bulk of it was in the Cubs, and then you know he spent a couple of years here and there. I didn't realize how. I mean, I remembered Lee Smith as a Cub again. Like I said, I'm coming in '87, so that's right as he was finishing up with the Cubs. Mm-hmm. But I didn't realize quite how long he was with Chicago.
Yeah.
So that makes a little bit more sense than I thought. I was like, well, okay, he's just there a couple of years, just like everybody else. But
yeah.
No, he had a. He really got started there, so that's cool.
Yeah.
Anything else on the Hall of Fame? Is there anybody I'm trying to think who might come onto it next year, 2021? Somebody that retired in after 2018? When did Matt Holliday retire? He retired after.
Well,
did he retire?
Was that about the time? That was about the time Holliday's last year. What was it, 17 or 18?
17 was the last year in St. Louis, I think, and then he played that partial next season in Colorado. He came back like the last little bit. Yeah. So no, 17 was the Yankees. So 16 was the last time he was in St. Louis.
17 well, he'll was the Yankees, be, and then you know, he'll be. I guess his first year he's eligible on the ballot. I would think he'd be on the ballot, and I would think.
Probably most fans are going to
You know, I think he'll be in the Hall of Fame, Cardinal Hall of Fame, sooner or later. And he played, 7 years in St. Louis? Is that what his
– Yeah. Because he came in 09 and left in 16, so
– Yeah, 7 years. So, you know, he'll be in. I don't know who else. I was trying to think like you. I was trying to think who else that played some years with the Cardinals.
You've got
since that 2014 kind of broke up. The players that came after that. You know, you got Holliday and Freeze, and Yachty. Yeah. Yachty's part of really that 04, 05, 06. I mean, really, he can go back that far. Wainwright probably, is a big part of the post of the post years of that 04, 05, 06 teams. Although he came up in 06, he really was a big part after that. So,
well, here's a guy. Here's a guy to think about. And again, it goes into what are you thinking about your Hall of Fame? And I want to pull it up because it probably seems kind of silly when I say it, and it probably is when I look at the numbers too. You got a guy, you know, he's only here for, well, he's 4 years when you get back to it. You got Jeff Suppan, who was part of that 2006 team, obviously. I mean, his numbers aren't that great in St. Louis when you look at him, and, you know, he came back for that half year. So I don't think that's a guy that would be in that mix, but he's a guy that we try to remember a little bit. And again, I don't think I'd advocate for it. I would definitely wouldn't advocate for him to be in there. I just wonder if he'll show up on the ballot someday, especially if we keep adding players.
Well, yeah, he could be. You know, was he one of the postseason's division series or championship series MVP or something? I mean, he really stepped up.
LCS MVP.
When?
I think it's 2006, but
okay.
You know, the NLCS MVP in 2006.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, I think pretty sure against the Mets.
He was a pretty good postseason guy for the Cardinals, as I remember. Maybe it was because of 06. I don't remember. He was a number four guy in the rotation. It's really hard to imagine that he would end up in the Cardinal Hall of Fame because he was basically the number four guy in most of the time when he was in the rotation. You know, he was always behind Carpenter and I was trying to think of Matt Morris and Woody Williams. I mean, when you lined those guys up, he came in, he was about the fourth or fifth guy in those rotations.
Yeah. Like you say, he stepped up, he was a 363 ERA in the postseason. And that includes his one stint with Milwaukee, which actually didn't go well in 2008.
Yeah.
He had, you know, like I said, NLCS MVP, his career with the Cardinals, he had a 3.94 ERA, won 47 games in 4 years. There's a lot to that. I'm not saying that he should be. I'm not saying that he will be. I just start thinking about some of these guys that we're seeing and what we're talking about, whether they're getting by. Is it because we remember these names and because they, you know, shone for a moment or two? Or if it because they had a full career, or if it's both. But if you get if you're looking for just the fame part, Suppan might be one of those guys that sneaks in there somewhere along the way.
Here's a name for you, David Eckstein.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he played three solid years for the Cardinals, was part of, he came after 05, 06, 07. Was that 3 years, his stay in St. Louis? Yep. And mm-hmm. I don't know that he ever won a gold glove or anything like that, but he was the leadoff guy. He was a pretty important guy in those years, and he was part of the 06 championship game. Might see his name start popping up if it goes on like this.
That's an interesting thing. I mean, he didn't have very much time in St. Louis, but obviously he won the World Series MVP, even though I really think Roland should have won that that year, but he won it. And, 2005, it's interesting, he was – actually got MVP votes. He was 21st on the MVP load, and he had two years of All-Stars in St. Louis in 05 and 06. The time he was there, the 3 years, kind of cuts into him a little bit. If he played another year or two in St. Louis, I think you probably automatically see him on there.
Right.
I mean, again, if you're going to start putting in two people a year, you may get into some of these guys.
Right.
Some of these guys that are just a little bit attentive of, okay, they had their moment, and they may have had their moment at the right time. World Series MVP. Maybe that's enough to get them in. I don't know. I wouldn't be a guy I don't think I'd really vote for, but I could understand why he might make the ballot, and some people would.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Daryl Porter's another one. You know, he was part of those, that 82 team. He was the World Series MVP. Does he ever get on the ballot? He wasn't a very popular player at the time because he took Ted Simmons' place, you know, and in 82, you know, that was quite controversial when they put Porter in for Simmons and sent Simmons off. But he did win the World Series MVP and the NLCS MVP in 82. So, yeah. You know, you never know. He might show up one of these days.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, he just hit 237.
Yeah.
You know, he's got some issues as we get into, you know, we're talking a little bit about, you know, Hernandez. Porter had some of the same issues, although that's not why he left St. Louis, I don't think.
No.
I mean, Porter was on that, you know, he was there from 81 to 85, so he was there for that good portion of it. Again, I don't think the numbers bear out that he would be, but, you know, again, if you're voting for Big Hall and if you're voting for names that you recognize, he could sneak in there for sure.
Yeah.
Now, again, we're looking at you guys. I feel like without knowing an obvious name that goes next year, you got to figure Hernandez gets in next year. I mean, I really thought he'd get it this year, but I think that the field is being winnowed enough that he's probably going to be the clear choice next year. And maybe him and Renteria, if they're both on the ballot, but, and Matt Morris needs to get more love, I think, too. But I mean, you just look at what Hernandez did in St. Louis. I think it's going to be really tough. It's kind of like Langford, you know, Langford that they kept waiting and waiting and waiting to put him on the ballot. As soon as they put him on, of course, he was elected.
He went in.
But it got to the point where it's like, he has to be on the ballot next year. There's just no reason he's not. And I feel like Hernandez is almost that way with the vote. It's like, I consider him a Met, but when you look at what he did with St. Louis and the connections that he does have, it just feels like next year has to be the year he gets in.
Well, I thought this year would be it, but yeah, you know, I don't know how many years they put him on the ballot before they boot him to the boot him off. I don't know if there's a limit on that or not.
I think so. I kind of feel like, and I'm not 100% sure about this, but from what I gather, that Red Ribbon Committee gets together in January or February, and I think the ballot comes out of that, of whoever they discuss, and then they also pick the guy that they're going to put in, you know, like Bill White this time.
Right.
And so I'm sure that they kind of take the ballot that they had last year and say, okay, here are the guys we're going to start with. And the ballot's not consistent. I've looked it up. The first 3 years, it was 8, and then there were 7 for 2 years, and there were 6, and then it was back to 7 this year. So, you know, they could add a player without taking somebody off. But, you know, right now there's 5 guys, so there's going to have to add a couple of guys next year probably to have at least one,
that may be. Is Whitey Herzog and Tony La Russa on that committee?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they are. Right.
Well, I imagine Whitey's trying to get all his – you're talking about the 80s guys. I'm sure Whitey's trying to get all his 80s guys, you know, he liked on that.
Yeah.
And I'm sure La Russa's a pretty loyal guy, so he's going to get – you know, we got Roland, we got Carpenter, we got Edmonds. You know, Renteria, they're going to keep him on there, you know, and I'm sure those two guys, Whitey and Tony, people listen to them. If they want someone on the ballot, they're going to put them on probably. So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's fair. I think there are guys that have their defenders and supporters and it well may be, I mean, you could easily see, I think, again, I don't know the whole process. I'm just kind of from what I've seen and what I think I've picked up. People can tell me that I'm wrong, but you could easily see Hernandez be the guy that gets picked next year by the committee. They just say, okay, we're gonna put Hernandez in, and then he comes off the ballot and, you know, you vote for 2 other guys and Hernandez gets in because of that. I honestly thought when Carlton came off in 2016, because he'd been on in 2015, I thought when he came off in 2016, I thought, okay, he's coming off the ballot because they're gonna put him straight in. And that wasn't the case. So maybe that's what they do. I don't know how they set all this up, and I'm sure they can kind of do it however they want to. It's their Hall of Fame.
It's their Hall of Fame.
But,
Doug, Don't the Red Ribbon Committee for the old timers, don't they have to be retired for so many years? I mean, before they even get to that, is that like a 30 or 40 year deal?
No, I don't. I think that they, I don't really, I need to pull up a, let me see if I can pull up a Hall of Fame press release. Because a lot of the times when I, if I've published it on the site, it'll tell, it'll tell how they come up with it. Let's see. The sixth ballot, the nominees were selected by the Red Ribbon Committee through a secret ballot process in January. And let's see, Red Ribbon Committee also elected a veteran prior for induction using a secret ballot process. So, and then the Cardinals organization can't opt to induct somebody that was a coach, broadcaster, or member of the front office. So, so it sounds like that committee just basically votes, and they vote on who should be on the ballot and who should be their pick for going in. And I mean, I'm sure there's discussions and stuff like that beforehand, and then they have secret ballot, and then probably the top however names make it on the ballot, and then they go from there. So yeah. I'm trying to see if it tells me to be eligible. Player must have played for the Cardinals for at least 3 seasons and must be retired from baseball from at least 3 years. The eligible pool of players is divided into modern and veteran, and this is where you're getting at. If a player is retired for more than 40 years, he's classified as a veteran player.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah, you're right. Now I read that, and I'm sure the people listening to this are just glad for me to be reading this process, this press release. What, what it is basically they'll vote for a guy that's been retired 40 or more years.
Yeah.
And then that's the only people they can put in, and then the others can be that. So Hernandez wouldn't fit that. So Hernandez is going to have to come in through the ballot at least for a long, long time.
Yeah, he's got a long ways to go. And as long as they keep putting him on, I guess if you're right, eventually they'll get him in. I hope he does. I remember him. I remember him as a player. I remember I watched him. saw him at the ballpark play. He was the best first baseman. And it might be because that was my position. I was a little I'm a little biased toward first baseman, but he was really he set the standard for first baseman in the major league. So, and he did it while he was at St. Louis. He won gold gloves with the Mets, but he really set the standard while he was in St. Louis.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, everything I've read from him and just see how he came up with that, I can definitely think that he needs to be there, even with those Mets connections. Russ, I told you before we started, when we were talking about you joining me, that I wasn't sure we could talk for an hour. We've talked for almost an hour just on the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
So it shows what I know. Before we, I think it's been more fun to talk about the Hall of Fame than it is to talk about where baseball is right now. Mm-hmm. But I guess we probably should touch on that a little bit. The players and owners still kind of butting their heads. We, we got that proposal of the health issues, all the situation around that last year. Sounds like at least right now, the plan is for Major League Baseball to go to the players on Tuesday with a economic proposal that the players will probably reject and try to come up with their own, but we'll see how it comes out. When you look at all this, and I know I saw tonight Bill DeWitt III saying that he felt like the season would happen because everybody wants to play. How optimistic are you? I mean, do you think they can get this done? Because it feels like we're kind of running against the clock to get this everything going so they can play this year.
Boy, I tell you what, I've gone back and forth on this, Daniel. When the virus first hit and they canceled everything, and I thought, and they first started talking about trying to play baseball, I said I just didn't see how it logistically could work. I didn't like the plan to play in Florida and Arizona, and I just didn't know how you could isolate the teams, and if one player tested positive, and that would shut that whole team down. And then they couldn't, then how would that impact the other teams as far as scheduling? And then, but Manfred just kept saying, we're going to play, we're going to play, we're going to play. And then when they came up with the league, the way they were going to divide the league up into 3 divisions, and then they were going to, they were going to play at the home stadiums and all that. And he kept insisting on it. Then I kind of said, well, I guess they're going to figure this thing out. And but now I'm back to thinking, I just don't know that I don't think we're going to play baseball this year. I just think this money thing, you know, the players had agreed to a prorated deal. Now they're talking about revenue sharing. You know, it's getting awful deep into, you know, we're getting into the summer and they don't seem like they're close. It seems like they've kind of taken us two steps backward after taking a step forward. So, and you know, Daniel, I just wonder if the owners are going to use this agreement that they're trying to come up with or trying to get the players to take as a forebearer into the renegotiation of the contract that ends after 2021. You know, they're just going to try to shove some things down their throat, get the players to take. And I just don't know. This lately in the last week or so, this just doesn't sound good to me, what's going on.
I think that the players are definitely concerned about the owners trying to stick some stuff in there that then they will have to, you know, they'll say, oh, well, now we've got it in here. You've got to put the foot in the door and now we can get it out. I do think they're concerned about that. You know, I feel like I maybe have a little bit of optimism because we're looking at people like, you know, like the Marlins just opened up their camp to people can come and they're not work practicing or anything like that, but they can come for workouts or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the Cardinals, I think, did the same with their side. I think we've seen some others talking about the plans of, you know, we're going to have, you know, the Texas, I was reading just now on Twitter, you know, Texas Rangers are going to have theirs at their ballpark and the Phillies will probably have theirs at their ballpark. It feels like there's a little bit of momentum from the player side and the owner side that they kind of feel like there's something going to happen. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise I don't think they would worry about opening these ballparks and doing these things because it's just a little bit extra work. But I think they're trying to get in a spot where when the agreement comes down, they can, you know, hit the ground running because they're going to need to. I mean, you're talking at least a couple of weeks probably. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I mean, how is spring training going to work with, you know, inter squad games and mm-hmm. drills when you have to stay, you know, so many people at the ballpark and stuff like that. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you're looking for a July kickoff, you know, you've got to have an agreement probably this week or very beginning of, and I say this week, this coming week, right after the week after Memorial Day, or that right at the beginning of the next week when you're at the beginning of June, because it's going to take a while to get the logistics, to get the players there and all that stuff. So
right.
I feel a little bit optimistic that they're going to. You can make the argument that they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. I do think the players have a point. You've seen some stuff from Jack Flaherty this week, you know, talking about, mm-hmm. you know, like he was watching game six and he's like, oh, we're supposed to just have a game like that and not high five, not celebrate, just kind of, you know, stay 6 feet away and wave at the guy who scores something. I mean, that's hard. And I mean, although I'd also say, I think that kind of game loses a lot. A walk-off game loses a lot when there's no fans there to cheer anyway.
Right.
But I, you know, I feel like you look at all those hoops that they're going to have to go through and all this idea of spreading people out and not doing this and not doing that and not showering at the ballpark and all this. And it's like, where do you draw the line and say, to some degree, this really isn't baseball?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the first time a player tests positive and on a team and they have to shut down, I would guess they'd have to shut down that team. And then how would that impact the schedule for the other teams? You know, all of a sudden, the Cardinals are scheduled to play the Blue Jays, and the Blue Jays player tests positive, and they isolate the Blue Jays team, and you know they can't come to St. Louis because of that or whatever. It just doesn't. It's a big leap. It seems like they're swimming upstream to get this season in. Get anything to the season in. It's really an upstream swim. So I right now, today, I'm not all that optimistic. Last week, if you'd asked me, Daniel, I was kind of upbeat about the whole thing, you know.
And that's the way it's been the last 2 months, right?
Right.
I mean, It's just, you know, about the time you think, okay, they're going to have ball, then you hit something else, and then about the time you just write it off, then they have this, you know, have another plan that comes out. And
yeah,
you know, I guess if nothing else, I haven't watched it as much. I haven't watched any of it, and I haven't heard as much talk about it as we did the first week. But so far, it seems like the KBO is doing okay. I mean, they're still playing. I assume they haven't had any positive tests. I assume that they're doing, it's surviving baseball with, you know, no fans in the stands, right, and stuff like that. Have you watched any of that?
No. I've just can't stand to watch sports. I don't, you know, I haven't really watched it. This time of the year, I'm usually on my Sirius XM radio. I'm listening to MLB radio, and I haven't listened to it in weeks. It's just hard because all they're talking about the same stuff over and over again. But I can't get into the Korean baseball, you know. And I've lost interest in replays. I'm sorry, I can't watch Game 6 another time, you know.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I put that out on Twitter. It's like I watched it more in the last 2 or 3 weeks, I think, than I have in 8 years, because, you know, I know it was on the radio a couple of times. I know it was on Fox Sports Midwest.
Yeah.
I know that they had it, you know, that opening day at home, you know, MLB played it on their, on the website. And then, you know, it was on ESPN this week, and it's a great game. Don't get me wrong. Although I think they ought to play that game again of Carpenter Halliday a couple more times.
Yeah.
They're gonna play kind of things, but there, you're right. There's something about knowing the ending, knowing the beats, knowing, oh, okay, well, this is where the pop-up hits Freeze on the head. Oh, this is where, you know, Bergman gets that ball, but hit, and it's great to watch them, but it'd almost be better. I think some people would enjoy, I've said this before, just some random games. My thing is, if they didn't play the rest of the season, just run the 2004 season from this point on.
Well, there you go.
Losses, whatever. I mean, just because you don't necessarily know what happened on a random game in August. No. You can actually watch it and say, oh, I mean, if you want to look it up beforehand, see if they win, that's up to you. But if you want to go into that and saying, wonder what happens in this game.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's a little easier to watch replays of games where you don't have them memorized.
Right. Right, right. That's right. Because we all know what happened in Game 6. We know it pitch by pitch. You know, what all happened there. And, you know, there's in some of the, you know, so that 2011 World Series, we're all quite familiar with that. So, yeah, they had started the 2004 season from Game 1. That would have been interesting because that wasn't the first couple of months were kind of rough, actually, is what I remember.
They kind of took on later on. I mean, that was the kind of cool thing about KMOX running that run in 2011. They started at August 25th and went all the way through the season. Which, I mean, they won most of those games, but they didn't win every game.
No.
And you don't necessarily remember all the things that happened in there. I mean, you remember things like Adron Chambers went scoring and things like that, especially later on. But, you know, those games in early September where hey, this team's starting to put something together, but we're still so far out of it. And, you know, well, Atlanta lost again. Okay.
Yeah.
But, you know, you don't know all that. You know that they made that run, but you don't necessarily know all the details of it. So that was kind of cool to, you know, when I'd be in the car and then just turn on the radio and, hey, you could listen to an inning or two or whatever. It's like, who are they playing? Oh, okay. Oh, Carpenter's pitching. Okay. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know. So that was fun, and I'd like to see that going on if for some reason the season gets canceled. But I don't know. For me, maybe it's just because so many things are opening up and it seems like, you know, the weather's changing and all this kind of stuff. It becomes harder to imagine, you know, just complete shutdown for me. But, you know, you're right. You have to get the players and owners to agree, and that's always asking a lot.
Yeah, you know, it's I think there's not, there's not a lot of trust there between them. I don't think the players, you know, when they switched, they said they said they go with a pro. They were asked if they would go with a prorated, and they said yes, we'll do that. Now they're talking about revenue sharing, and revenue sharing is, you know, you're an accountant, Daniel. You know what? you can make that, you can fix the books any way you want on a revenue sharing deal, you know? So, the players are probably not quite sure they can trust that. So, that's when they start talking revenue sharing, when I thought, you know, this is going to be a whole different thing.
Well, yeah, because then you get into what is revenue. I mean, does Park Village count as revenue? You know, do those expenses go against it? You know, do the TV rights? So many people have a share in the TV. What, you know, what if you undercharge that? What if you overcharge it? Could you, you know, these kind of things. So, yeah, and the owner, and the players are like, well, we want documentation. And so far they haven't gotten it. And unlikely to get a lot of it because that's just not the way the owners run.
No, the owners don't want to start showing too much of that stuff with the new contract coming up, because they start showing it in this year, then they'll, it'll be easier for the players to demand it for the new contract. So, it gets real complicated, and that's what worry. That's what's got me so down right now about seeing baseball this year.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I hopefully we'll get good news coming up this week, and we can be a little bit more optimistic about it. Going forward.
Yeah, and it'd be easier to write about games instead of old games, you know.
It's not a fun time to try to put stuff together. Well, Ron's been fun. I'm glad you joined us. Again, it wasn't exactly the discussion I thought we'd have, but I think it turned out even better. And let just repeat for everybody where you're at and where they can find you.
Well, I'm I blog pretty regularly right now at Redbird Rants, you know, and I'm on Twitter at Uncle Frank at FR Robinson 1957. I actually plan sometime after I get in tomorrow to start working on a new blog for Redbird Rants. I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do. I'll sleep on it tonight and I'll wake up in the morning with an idea maybe or something like that. But, you know, we're a quite active site. We're putting out new stuff all the time and, you know, trying to stay active, trying to keep things going there, you know, as best as we can.
Well, good. It's a good deal. And look forward to seeing what you get out here pretty soon. Anyway, until next week, Alan should be with me again next week, and hopefully we're talking about an agreement, and we're talking about things, because if not, things may be a little dicey, as we said. So until then, for us, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Thanks.
Shooter from the belt to the plate, a swing and a miss, and that's a winner! That's a winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!